Welcome back to The Download. That was a clue about who our new guest is. This is Mark Caro. I'm here with my good friend Chris Jones.
Hey, everybody.
And Chris, why don't you introduce our in-studio, sitting right here guest.
Awesome, live, both live and in person, in the studio with us. We have the one, the only, Rainn Wilson, new Trier High School graduate. Let's just get that out for starters. We're not any interloping from Los Angeles here.
That's right. But I got some roots. in the area.
So you're gonna know Rainn for you're gonna know Rainn from playing Dwight on a little show called The Office for the NBC, the American Office.
Right.
The
American. You might know him from 6 Feet Under.
You know,
there's only one office, Chris.
I am not blowing smoke. I'm going to start by saying this. I'm not blowing smoke. I think of all the TV shows I've ever watched in my life, I think 6 Feet Under might just have been the greatest TV of all time.
Wow.
I actually was writing that today. I was writing about something completely different, but I was actually writing about how in the early aughts, a lot of playwrights went to TV.
Right.
And that show was kind of the one of the first. Alan Ball and, of course, Rick Cleveland was on the writing staff.
Right.
As all
mm-hmm.
of that.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? Do you recall that fondly, that show?
I do. You know, that show really launched my career. So obviously I have a lot of, you know, connection to that fact. But it was pretty extraordinary, the way everything was lining up in the kind of the dawn of golden age of TV that really started at that time. The Sopranos was on, The Wire was on at the same time, and then 6 Feet Under. And it was such an amazing mishmash of, like, it was part soap opera, but it was drama, and it had comedy elements, and it had a really morbid sense of humor, and you couldn't quite put your finger on what it was, but it always got you. It always made you laugh and always got you in the gut.
And I always, you know, every episode started with a death. So every time you switched on the TV, you were like, everyone is thinking, when am I going to die? How am I going
right.
to? Like, I remember thinking that every episode, how am I going to die?
The title's kind of there too, Chris.
Right, yes. But it was like, but I always thought it was also interesting about how actually the Broadway musical Fun Home had the same sort of idea, which is the idea of we all live. Death is a constant, right? We're going to die. We all know that. But most of the time we block it away. We don't think about it every day. Here was a show where you actually had the absurdity of living so directly with death that it messed you up. And you were even playing a mortician, as I recall.
I was. So. Yeah. It's a crazy story how that all happened, because I was plugging away in LA and no one knew who I was. And
you were an MFA, right, by that point?
I had my theater degree, and I'd done a bunch of theater in New York and around in the regions and regional theater. And then I was auditioning for little parts on 6 Feet Under, and I didn't get cast in a whole bunch of different parts. Like, I auditioned for a gay choir member and a guy who died of a heart attack and just smaller roles. And then I saw the role of Arthur. And I asked to audition for it, and they allowed me to audition for it, and then I got the role. But had I gotten cast in one of the five other roles that I had auditioned, I never would have gotten that great role.
Died in the first 5 minutes, and that would have been it.
And would you never have got The Office if that had happened?
I probably never would have had The Office.
See,
yeah, so you never know, like, rejection can oftentimes be the best thing for a person.
And then how quickly after 6 Feet Under did you get The Office?
It was pretty quick. That kind of put me on the map, and I got some movie roles from that, and I was just on people's radar. In fact, right after 6 Feet Under, I got cast on this Janine Garofalo show that was going to be on ABC, and it was infamous because we did the table read for the executives at ABC, and it went so bad that they pulled the plug immediately, even though they had the sets built. We had our plane tickets in our hand. We were ready to go.
They pulled the plug on the table read.
Yeah, so we did the table read.
Wow.
And everyone looked very upset.
Like, they were all sitting there with these scowly faces.
And an hour later, they're like, nope, plug has been pulled. It's not happening. But on the way to that table read, I ran into someone I knew, and they're like, oh, they're going to do the American version of The Office. And inside, I was like, oh, shoot, I'm on this Janine Garofalo show. That's pretty lame, and I don't want to do it.
But maybe if I throw the table read.
Yeah.
You probably so I read really bad. I just put on a giant Italian accent for it. So, Janine.
Why was it so bad? It was just bad?
It really was. It wasn't. I don't know what it was. We've drawn a little crowd here, guys, by the way.
Right here in the showcase studio.
There are people standing outside. They're waving.
Oh, they can
Rainn
hear me,
Wilson
too.
In the showcase studio.
Look at those. idiots. Get a life, idiots.
No, they're like, no. It's like they're like you in Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good. Another good reference.
No, so. But you'd had excellent writing in 6 Feet Under. Yeah. That didn't do you any harm. And then pretty good writing in The Office, right?
That's right. And there's a similarities in some way. I mean, for a network comedy, The Office had a lot of like heart to it and heartbreak in it and real human moments. I mean, mostly it was just pretty silly comedy, but it always kind of leavened the comedy with those, you know, those human moments that they sprinkled in.
It's a bit more oblique, right? Like, if you think of 6 Feet Under, I always think of it as a sort of, like you said, a sort of straight up sort of dramatic type of thing. The Office was a little more, just a little more off kilter, right? Or absurdist, I guess.
Yeah, it had an absurdist element, and sometimes we would just go straight up into physical comedy.
So again, it's Mark Caro and Chris Jones on The Download. We're here with Rainn Wilson. If you'd like to call in, 312-981-7200. You can text that or call it.
First-time callers.
Yeah, call up. He will take your calls. 312-981-7200. Just want to jump in that. And also just want to say that why you're here in Chicago right now is that you're going to be in a world premiere production at Steppenwolf Theater called The Doppelganger, which opens...
Previews are April 5th. It opens April 15th.
Look at you. You got it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have it down because we are so not ready for April 5th, and it's just around the corner, and I'm terrified.
So you like doing a play? When did you last do a... You've done plays a fair bit throughout your career, right?
Yeah, so when I got out of acting school at NYU, and I did 10 years of theater, and I did tours.
And made no money, right?
Made no money, did Shakespeare and bus and truck tours, and I did a little bit of Broadway and off-Broadway, but... And before I got into TV and film. So always kind of my first love was the theater. And I feel like I grew up doing the theater. And now I have opportunities to do it because, frankly, I can afford to do a play now.
right.
So I did one 2 years ago. I did Will Eno's Tom Paine at the Geffen Playhouse.
Oh, yeah, we had that here, a different actor. But it's a great piece.
That's a great piece. And we actually filmed it. We made a short little weird film. You can find it online somewhere. It's on Broadway HD, a filmed version of that play. And other than that, the last time I did a play was 2001. I did Taming of the Shrew at the Old Globe. And then not since the 90s before so that.
Did you used to see Steppenwolf in Chicago? I mean, is this like, what does Steppenwolf mean to you to do that here?
Obviously, you know, being studying theater in the 80s and the 90s, Steppenwolf was just legendary. I mean,
right.
I did see their Three Sisters in 1985, which really
That's a famous production, yeah.
Yeah, it blew my mind. Yeah. It was Joan Allen and... Jeff Perry and Austin Pendleton directed it, and it was absolutely
that was before
incredible.
the new building, of course.
Yeah. And so and I saw Malkovich in Death of a Salesman. That was a Goodman, I think, production. Yeah. But they were just legendary, and so you know the opportunity to come work here was really exciting to me.
Is it that have they tried to get you before, or is this just this just came together?
There's been some conversations in the past about maybe something like this might be good, but the time didn't work out. This time slot worked out just perfectly.
And are you gone from here, and are you still have family here? Do you still feel connected to Chicago?
I don't have any family left in Chicago. I only did 2 years of high school here.
Oh, you did?
But I have a lot of high school friends, and I really love the city in so many ways. I mean, I love the rich arts scene it has here. I really think Chicago has the best theater scene in the United States.
Right.
I mean, it kicks New York's ass. It really does. And I love the way that the city loves its culture, protects and nurtures its culture, its restaurant culture, and its... You know, the amazing museums, and I'm just so grateful to the city of Chicago because this is where I got started as an actor. So I started at New Trier, and I wouldn't be an actor if I didn't have those great acting teachers and that amazing acting program.
So was
that
your junior and senior year at
New
Trier? So how did you come? What brought you to New Trier for those last 2 years?
My family are Baha'is, members of the Baha'i faith.
Right,
so we lived right down the street from the Baha'i Temple in Wilmette.
The beautiful Baha'i Temple.
Yeah.
And you were a guard there.
I was a security guard there. When I was 18 years old.
Because all those Baha'i people get out of hand?
Yeah, they're terrible. Yeah, they're too peaceful, and they need to be slapped around a little bit. So, Yeah, so that's what brought us there. My parents worked at the Baha'i National Center in Evanston, and it was great. So I went from this kind of like working class suburban Seattle high school that didn't really have much of a theater department, and, wow. and came into to New Trier, and that's what started me on this path.
Which led me
to WGN AM Radio 720.
There aren't that many Baha'i temples, right? I mean, that's a kind of a thing.
So the Baha'is mostly worship in their homes and in community centers. We don't really have churches because we don't have clergy. There's one on every continent, and now they're starting to build some more. But yeah, there's only like 7 or 8 Baha'i houses of worship in the world right now.
When you drive up to this one, too, it's like you're driving along, you know, because ours is right on the lake, and you see it, and you're like, wow, what is that?
Amazing.
But I grew up near there, too. So,
yeah.
So, all right, we have to go to a break real quick, but we're going to be right back with Rain Wilson. We are back on The Download. Mark Caro here with Chris Jones.
Hey, everybody.
And Rain Wilson.
Yes, Rain Wilson.
Hello.
Right here in the studio.
Yes.
Yes.
So, last time you were here, he's here, Rain Wilson is here starring in The Doppelganger, which is opening soon at Steppenwolf Theater. You were here in summer of 2008 for the movie The Rocker, and I interviewed you then and had the privilege of that, and we had pizza beforehand. But the main thing that we did was we went to the Chicago Cultural Center because some of your art that you own from Tony Fitzpatrick was on the wall
right
there.
Great Chicago artist, Tony Fitzpatrick.
So you're a patron of the Chicago.
You're an early adopter because he's kind of a big deal now.
Yeah. I bought my first piece from him in 2006, I think, something like that. Wow. 2005.
You have it on your wall.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I love his stuff. He even made something for my son, Walter, who's here. A little, that W with the Walter and stuff like that. Yeah. Oh. In fact, I have to call him. I don't even think he knows I'm in town. I need to
maybe he's listening.
Out.
Well, he'll know now.
So
call up 312-981-7200. Call or text. You can talk to Rain Wilson, ask him questions, as Nick is about to do. Let's put through Nick. Hello, Nick.
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're good.
Obviously, huge fan. Thank you for the laughs. That's as much as I'll say regarding all of us huge fans out there. But just wanted to take a moment. Was kind of curious. You know, a lot of us when you know Michael or the amazing Steve Carell left the office. I was wondering if you have any behind the scenes, you know, like fan notes as to you know how that happened, how you found out, and you know how everyone reacted. Did everyone go out for a drink at Poor Richard? You know.
All right.
We knew that Steve was leaving when his contract was up because he was one of the biggest movie stars on the planet at the time. Yeah. And he had so many opportunities to go do incredible movies with great directors. And but it was all very amicable. And we went out. I forget what we did. It was all a blur, but we probably went out for pizza and beer and and then, you know, I think the show struggled for a little while then. We brought on James Spader and Ed Helms was the boss, and it was just a little bit tricky finding our dynamic. But that being said, I do think that some of the best Office episodes ever made were in the last season or two. There were some really great ones, especially the last 7 or 8 episodes of the show itself.
Why do you say that, those last 7 or 8?
Because they just put a ton of work. They're very thoughtful about how do we want to wrap this up.
Yeah.
And they gave every character an arc, and it had a lot of heart in it and a lot of absurdity. They went places that you never went before. You met the documentary crew. The characters were being interviewed in different ways. And it was great with Dwight and Angela and their baby and stuff. It was a very satisfying. Speaking of, we were talking about 6 Feet Under earlier.
Yeah.
The best finale of all.
I was going to say that. Yeah, you know, when we were talking about that earlier, I was going to say you also have the best finale.
I agree with that. Yes. I got off
in
my
couch.
My memory of myself in that finale is I got off my couch. I was lying on my couch like you do. And I was like, oh my God. I remember getting off the couch and bouncing on the living room, just going, oh. And it was incredible. It was the greatest. Mm. I don't know how they.
Yeah.
And I remember
amazing.
The one, and particularly the death where you just go down on a cruise ship or something, right? That was, I forget which character that was.
Was
one
it
the,
Freddy?
Freddy. That was.
What was your death on there?
I didn't get a death on it. They didn't bring me back for a death.
Oh, you should have gotten a death.
Yeah, I had been wrapped from the show at that point. I'd done 13 episodes, and I was off.
But it was an incredible finale.
Yeah.
But if you'd had a death, what would it have been?
What would Arthur Martin's death have been?
That's a fascinating question.
I think he would have slipped and fell into the incinerator. Inflamed, embalmed. No.
He would have been cremated.
He would have cremated himself.
He would have been an urnless cremation. Yeah.
So how did you do, you know, when The Office was at its height, right? So here you, at that point, you're very famous. And did you find that intrusive? Because you're a humble sort of guy, you're sort of a centered sort of guy. Did you find that identification with a particular character? I'm guessing people would come up to you on the street and shout lines from the show at you.
Yeah.
Some people, that drives them crazy. Some people go, oh, that's just fun and part of the deal. Where were you on all that?
Yeah, it's, it's a double-edged sword. So the reality is that I will always be known first and foremost for Dwight.
In your life? You've saying that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think there's any way I could do a show that would ever be bigger than that show. That show was absolutely huge. I mean, it was appointment must-see television.
Yeah.
And now you've got generations watching it on Netflix over and over again.
And you don't even have huge, huge shows like that so much anymore because everything's so much more spread out, right?
Exactly. Much smaller audiences all across the board. So I don't think anything will ever be bigger. I'm so grateful for what the opportunities that it gave me. I mean, I bought a house. Hello.
All right.
But I got to do a lot of really cool projects, meet a lot of really cool people, and, you know, put me on the map as an actor. I get to come play a lead role at Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic. But it is a little frustrating in that I did 10 years of theater before I did The Office, and I did like 4 or 5 years of TV and film before I did The Office. And I've done, 10 films since The Office that no one has really seen. They just haven't done very well. And so there is a wide range to my work that most people are like, Dwight.
What are people, so what's the average? So if we were to walk out with you and people, in a situation where you're being recognized, what is the most annoying thing people do? They just say Dwight over and over again? Is that
what's pretty annoying? I think the most annoying is when people touch me without like permission. Yeah. Like they'll just come up and they'll just put their arm around me or grab my arm put their arm around my waist and just as because like I'm on their TV means that they have the right to kind of like just grab me, and it's kind of weird. People lose their kind of natural inhibitions.
So what do you do when they do that?
I punch him in the throat. What else would you do?
If you see someone, if you're like having dinner at a not like hugely nice place, but if you're just in a general nice place and you see the person walking towards you and do you think, oh, that's nice? Or do you think,
Usually it's number two. Usually it's like, I just want to eat my veggie burger. But if I'm with my family, I don't do photos or anything like that. But if I'm out by myself, then I'll, do photos. So yeah, that's a weird thing is when I first got well known for The Office, it was before all cell phones had cameras.
Right.
So people mostly wanted to just shake your hand and say hi. And then all of a sudden, every single person looking out on the street, every person has a camera in their pocket.
Yeah.
So it's a completely different way of relating. They don't even want to say hi or nice job. They're like, can I get a picture?
More autographs. They just have to take the picture of you.
I've always thought, I've always imagined when you're a celebrity here's one of the things I wonder if you lose. Like sometimes when I see celebrities, like I go to a lot of Broadway shows, so I see a lot of celebrities, and what I always notice is that they don't make random eye contact because they worry that if they make eye contact, that what we just described will immediately happen.
Yeah.
So they, I think I was standing at the urinal next to Billy Crystal just recently, and he's looking down, and I'm like,
okay, this is getting weird.
Who hasn't had that experience?
And I remember thinking that must be a downside because the rest of us, we kind of look around, we see who's interesting, blah blah blah. But if you do that,
you checked out his package, didn't you? Come on. Let's get real.
On that note, I think we got to go to a break, but we're going to be right back with Rainn Wilson on The Download on WGN. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Download, everybody. How you doing? It is about 9 minutes past 9. Chris Jones here with my good pal Mark Caro.
Hello.
We're sitting in for Justin Kaufman. We're here all the way through 11 o'clock tonight, live and in person at this very moment. The one, the only, Mr. Rainn Wilson in studio. in studio. Yes, talking with us right here on the download. So Rain is in town doing a play, an international farce, as they say.
Yeah.
So
the doppelganger.
The doppelganger. Yeah.
So, you know, we want to ask you about that, but we've got Adam patiently waiting on hold. So okay. Let's, Adam, you're on with Rain and Mark and Chris. So shout out, man.
Hey, Rain. So I was just curious to see what your different relationships right now is with people from the office.
Oh. Yeah, well, I keep in touch with pretty much everyone from the office, and we get some good text chains going and stuff like that. And in fact, I think Jenna Fisher's show just premiered tonight on ABC. Oh. She's got a new show, Splitting Up Together or Living Together, but split, splitting in a house.
Divorcees living, in the same house.
Divorcees right. in the same house together. We all get along great, and it was a great ensemble. We all got along fantastic. In fact, directors would come on the set of The Office and be like, oh my god, I can't believe it, this is like paradise here. Everyone gets along, everyone's chummy, we kind of give each other notes, and there's not any big ego clashes, and it was a pretty dream work environment.
What about like a reunion? Did they tempt you? Did they throw large buckets of cash away?
I haven't gotten any buckets thrown at me yet.
I'm gonna be like Roseanne,
waiting for the bucket. I know. I don't know, there's a lot of rumors online about an office reunion, but
really?
I haven't heard word one about it. So
you've done movies, you've done a TV show, and now you're at Steppenwolf. Tell me about sort of the rhythm of the work you're doing now, and is there a rhythm that's kind of for you and as an actor, like your most natural mode, like in terms of the weekly TV show versus the being on stage every night but preparing?
Well, let me tell you that theater is friggin' hard, bro. I forgot how hard theater is.
That's why they call it theater.
It is killing me. This play is about to explode my head. I mean, it's a huge play.
So what's it about? Tell us the nub of what is this thing about?
It's a farce. It's a straight up and going in the wrong doors at the wrong time and the wrong person showing up and pratfalls. And, I play two characters. I play a billionaire copper mining.
Copper mining.
Copper mining.
That was a policeman. Billionaire copper. Policeman.
A magnate. And I also play his identical doppelganger, who's a kindergarten teacher from Quincy, Illinois.
The title character.
Yes. So they play the two characters, and they get confused for each other, of course, and mayhem ensues. But the interesting thing about this play, and what really drew me to it, is it is a really dark skewering of international economic politics at the same time. So this whole farce takes place in the Central African Republic in a big mansion as all of these titans of industry and politics seek to kind of exploit the resources of Africa and the country. So, but it's not too heavy-handed. It's not like lectury. It's one of the characters as a Chinese entrepreneur, billionaire, and there's a British diplomat and an American war general. And so it's all these kind of really extreme political characters caught up in this comic mayhem. And it's really funny and super, super clever.
And you're probably on stage a lot because you've got two characters.
I am so rarely off stage. It's almost pathetic. I have so many lines. Oh, it's killing me. I have so many lines and so much to do. But Tina Landau is our great fearless director. She's been at Steppenwolf for a long time and on Broadway, and she's amazing.
Is this a Broadway-aimed project? Are you just here for this? Everyone always goes, no, we're just going to see.
You know, I honestly don't know if a dark political farce would go on Broadway. And I don't know that I'm a big enough like name.
You're a big name.
They have Bradley Cooper opening Broadway shows, you know? They don't want the guy who played Dwight, you know? So I have no idea about any Broadway aspirations. I'm just doing it to have a blast doing this thing. And once it's a pain right now, once it's up and running with an audience and we get the laughter, I think it's going to be
really fun.
How is
the timing? Because the timing is, you know, in TV, obviously the comedic timing is a totally different animal, right?
Yeah.
So here you've got to land that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you have to land your timing and you have your pratfalls and your punchlines to, you know, 30 rows up in the balcony in a 450-seat house. So you're projecting your performance in a different way than TV, where MTV, you're allowing the camera to capture your performance. So it's a very different thing. But, you know, I did so much theater. It's kind of, it's in your bones, you know, and it's really fun to get
so
back.
What would you really like to, like, what would you really like to do now? Like, what is your, you know, the rest of your life? What would you,
Wow, before the montage at the very end?
Before you die, like in 6 feet under, what, you know, what remains for you? What floats your boat, my friend?
Well, this has always been one of my dreams, and it really has, to go back and do theater again and to get to play some really interesting roles. I want to do some more directing. There's a film that I wrote called Banzai Shadow Hands that I have out at a bunch of producers and a bunch of places right now to try and drum up some money and some interest in, that I would either direct and star in, or I would just direct. I'm happy just directing it. And I'm creating a show on AMC right now to star in. We'll see if they pick it up, but it's a science fiction dark comedy about an alien living in the San Fernando Valley. So I'm really excited about that. So I'm getting to do my dream. I really am. I'm getting to do a lot of different kinds of projects, and and I don't have to worry about money so much. That allows me to do what I want. So I'm really truly grateful and blessed the way things have worked out.
Well, we just so appreciate you. You know, you might not know this if you're listening, but you've just come from like about an 8-hour rehearsal, I think, right, or some ridiculous.
Yeah,
like,
ungodly, or more. Yeah.
And we really appreciate you coming down to the studio.
Yeah.
Rather than going home to bed,
right,
just coming down to
chat. You can follow him on Twitter, at Rainn Wilson. You've got 4.54 million followers.
That's nuts.
You're very good on Twitter. I'm one of them.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I don't know. I was on early, so they lined up, suckers. I hope the great city of Chicago will turn out and support Steppenwolf and this hysterical play.
And people, if you see Rainn Wilson on the street, do not touch him.
No,
we're cooler than that, Chicago.
You could just be polite, wave to him. Hello, I like your work very much. Would you mind if I had a picture, or would you sign my forehead with this Sharpie?
Right.
Something like that.
Rainn, thanks so much.
Chris,
it's really been
Mark,
a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can't wait to see you on stage.
Okay.